I happen to be a Harvard graduate, Mr. Jefferson.
I attended William and Mary, Mr. Adams.
All right, so hello everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of the William & Mary Sports Blog podcast. So as you've probably noticed by now, we're pretty much just doing these at random, so it's a nice little gift or fun thing to see that we've actually created a podcast. So we've been a little busy over the last month or so it's good to get back in the groove with podcast. So we have a pretty good slate for today to talk about. An exciting time to be a William & Mary Tribe fan, especially with the women's national team. So we'll start off with some Tribe trivia before jumping into our talk about the women's national team and William & Mary alum Jill Ellis. So the Tribe trivia for today relates actually to Jill Ellis, surprise, surprise. And the question is, when did Jill Ellis and John Stewart graduate from William & Mary? So there's a few hints related to this one. It's that they graduated in the same decade. So let's say like 1970 to 1980, 1980 to 1990, something like that. And they graduated within 4 years of each other. So when did Jill Ellis and John Stewart graduate from William & Mary? As you may or may not know, both played soccer at the D1 level at William & Mary. Jill, obviously, on the women's team, and John Stewart on the men's team. So think about that throughout this podcast, and we'll give you the answer at the end. So with that, we'll jump into our first topic of the podcast. All right, so to get us started, what we mentioned at the onset is that we wanted to talk about the exciting win that the U.S. women's national team recently had over the Netherlands in the World Cup final. So now they're going on their cross-country, I'm sure, international tour to talk about their victory. And as we were most excited about, William & Mary actually has a little bit of a connection here, actually a big connection here, in that the head coach of the women's national team is Jill Ellis, who went to William & Mary and graduated at a soon-to-be-announced date in our Tribe trivia. But she actually has a really cool background, and we don't talk about her enough. But for this episode, we really want to talk about her and the women's national team and kind of who Jill was on campus, you know, what she was into, her soccer career in general, and obviously talk about her coaching career as well and what she's done since William & Mary. So with that, I'll pass it over to Kyle to start in talking about Jill Ellis and her time at William & Mary so we can learn a little bit more about her and her connection to the Tribe.
Yep. So first, just huge congratulations to Jill and the U.S. Women's National Team for their victory over the Netherlands, and just another impressive World Cup. I mean, it's really, really amazing to see what they do going 7-0. We'll get into that later, but just talking about Jill Ellis' William & Mary career. So I had when she graduated, but now I cannot do that because that's I would be giving away our trivia. But she played 4 years for William & Mary. She finished with 32 goals. She ranks 9th in career points with 83 points during her career at William & Mary. In her senior year, she earned third-team All-America honors. And she made the tournament, her team, William & Mary, made the tournament all 4 years that Ellis played, including the Elite Eight in her senior year. So she was very successful during her time at William & Mary, unsurprisingly, and the team also was a very good team. But that sets the stage for her background at William & Mary. And then, David, you can go ahead and dive into the World Cup.
Yeah, so obviously since graduating from William & Mary, she's got on to become a head coach. And in fact, with her recent World Cup victory over the Netherlands, she is one of only two coaches in international history in the World Cup to win back-to-back World Cup titles. The only other head coach to do that is Vittorio Pozzo, if I'm even saying that right, and he won two World Cup titles on the men's side with Italy in 1934 and 1938, so forever ago. And obviously, Jill is the first woman to do so, so it's a big deal in terms of her blazing a path forward and obviously winning the biggest game on the biggest stage in back-to-back World Cups, so within the span of the World Cup in general. And it's really cool to see not only that, but her record is pretty much insane at this point. Her her record in 126 games as a U.S. head coach, she's won 101 of those, and she's lost only 7. But I think that probably what's even more impressive is that she's never lost a World Cup match. So if you put that kind of in perspective of she's never lost a game as the head coach, I mean, you can say that, yeah, they have a great team and they have great players, but as we know, the best team doesn't always win. And to do it that many times, playing against the best teams literally in the world, obviously she's doing something right when it comes to coaching, training, subbing players in and out, starting lineups, you know, making sure that her team is mentally sharp and ready to play. And so it's been really cool to watch her play at the national stage and even give William & Mary some free earned media in that right before the game, I was watching the pregame and it showed her and it showed the Netherlands coach. Interestingly enough, the Netherlands coach went to UNC Chapel Hill. And of course they had UNC Chapel Hill up there as that head coach's alma mater, but it also showed William & Mary as Jill's alma mater. So that was really cool to see, and think about how many eyeballs were watching that is also really cool. And it was fun to watch, and it was only a 2-0 victory over the Netherlands, but in the end it turned out to be a pretty decisive victory in the end. So it's something, as we've said before, we don't talk about her enough, and I don't think we as a country even talk about the women's national team enough. And now I think that will 100% change, having first won against Japan 4 years ago and now beating the Netherlands and having not lost in that entire span is a pretty insane thing. And if you think about it, so we have Jill Ellis, who's the women's national team's head coach. We have Sean McDermott, who's the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, William & Mary grad. Mike Tomlin, William & Mary grad, NFL head coach. I mean, wouldn't you say those are the three most high-profile coaches, or maybe even people in the sports world that William & Mary has? Like, is there anyone else that even comes close to those three people?
I mean, I think those three are pretty impressive. I mean, who would have thought that like a small school like William & Mary would have three high-profile coaches and have a Super Bowl-winning coach, and now the first coach in Women's World Cup history to win back-to-back World Cups. And it's pretty crazy. And just touching on what you were saying earlier, so she has 101 wins, and you said her World Cup, she hasn't lost a game. So her record is actually 13-0-1. So, yeah, it's just insane World Cup record. And like you were saying, I mean, people might say, oh, yeah, it's expected. The U.S. has the best athletes. Like, they should win every year. I mean, the U.S. has only won 4 FIFA World Cups, and Jill Ellis has won 2 of those. So she's won
the most, by the way, though. It's the most in the world, 4 of them. But yeah, she's won half. Yeah, most in the
world, and she's won half of the U.S.'s World Cups. So, I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, yeah, U.S. should win every year. I mean, she's won half of their World Cups, and they've only won 4. So, I mean, pretty impressive nonetheless what she did this year.
And she, I mean, of the three that I just mentioned being the highest – profile sports figures that William & Mary has, maybe even ever, she is number one by far. Like, think about it. It's not even close. Like, soccer is the world's number one sport. That is the World Cup. That's
it's arguably,
I mean, is that not like, it's international. It's the biggest sport in the world. And I was thinking about this from like, from a female sports perspective, from a women's sports perspective, that might be the biggest game in the world, like the biggest single game in the entire world of all women's sports is the Women's World Cup. Like, what's bigger than that? Basketball doesn't have anything. There's no, you know, football, no, obviously. Hockey, no. Baseball, there's no, it's like softball. So, like, it's literally the biggest game in all of women's sports, is it not?
It is. It definitely
think
is.
About it. And she has won 2 years in a row. And so I think it's not even close, not even a comparison between Jill, and that's not even a disrespect to Sean McDermott and Mike Tomlin. And I'd assume they'd probably agree in saying that Jill is the highest profile William and Mary sports alum maybe ever right now, which is insane to think, but it's been really cool. And I hope that every time they talk about Jill, they hopefully bring up William and Mary every now and then. I know that we've seen so many videos with Jill, and she comes back to campus all the time. I think that on our Instagram page, she actually has, she came to the, I think it was a Gold Rush game within, I think it was a couple of years ago maybe. And we actually took a video of her coming out to the court, and we pinned it on our Instagram story area. So there, she comes back all the time. And when I was recently, go ahead.
2016, I believe.
Is that when it was?
But yeah, she's very active with William and Mary.
Yeah, and when I was at the William and Mary Manhattan event with the athletics department, and it was kind of fundraising, but also like meet the coaches, and Hughie was there. It was really cool to hear. It was Julie Shackford, right, our new women's head coach, and she played with Jill, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, while at William and Mary, and she was actually at the games. She went to, if not all, like the last two or three games. And it was cool because we follow her on Instagram, and she was posting all these cool pictures and videos of Jill and the team. And she even met up with Jill after the World Cup game that they won, which was insane. And then I commented from the William Mary sports blog page, jealous. And she responded, jealous. J-I-L-L-I-S, something like that. And I said, well played. And then she responded, it's my William and Mary education. And that was well played as well. But I think we can leave it there on that note. We're going to keep this podcast shorter than the other ones. I know we've probably droned on and on with the other podcasts, but we're really excited to be talking about Jill Ellis, and obviously hope the best for her moving forward and the team. Awesome for her, awesome for the country. They'll be here where I am in Manhattan tomorrow morning at the victory parade. So that'll be really cool to see. I'm sure it'll be a complete madhouse, them going through Manhattan and celebrating, but really cool to see. So we'll wrap up this section here and we'll move on to our second topic of the day. All right, so our second topic here actually has to do with a recent article that we posted on the blog that many of you probably saw, and it's related to Marcus Thornton. So many of you will remember that name. In the recent past, he graduated in 2015, actually the same year that I graduated. But essentially, now that we're about 4 years out, we're actually over 4 years out from his graduation, it's definitely more than time to retire his number. So we were just looking through and we were checking out whose numbers are retired right now and kind of how Marcus stacks up against them. Obviously stacks up very well, but there is kind of a handful of players from across several generations that really had insane careers at William and Mary, and I can just list them. Chet Giermack played from 1947 to 1950, and he's actually the one where Marcus broke his all-time scoring record in Marcus's senior season. And the thing that was crazy to me is that Chet Giermack at 2,052 career points did that without a three-point line, which is pretty insane. And like his overall points per game average is actually higher than Marcus's. So he must have just been in the paint. I don't know what he was doing, but whatever he was doing,
it was working.
Yeah, I mean, he shot 41% from the field, so you'd have to assume that so many of those are in and around the rack. You know, he must have been a guy who was playing down low, but maybe we can talk to some old timers who I assume obviously didn't watch him play in 47 to 1950, but they probably heard about him. And then we met, so remember when you and I were at the CAA tournament in Charleston and we met, was it Chet's son?
I think it was his son, yeah.
Chet's son, and he was talking to us about his dad. We can look it up. We can find his name because we posted it on Instagram. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. We met him and his sons, so that's like Chet's grandsons. And so we're just talking about how good Chet was and how he's a William & Mary legend. But that's just something that stood out to me. So Chet's number is retired. Jeff Cohen with, again, he also had 2,000 points. He played from 1958 to 1961. Averaged 19.4 points per game over his four-year career. There are three more. John Lowenhaupt played from 1975 to 1978. Keith, I'm probably going to botch his name, Keith Ciplicki? C-I-E-P-L-I-C-K-I. He didn't really graduate that long ago, 1982 to 1985. So in the grand scheme of things, he's actually the most recent one of the numbers that were retired. He finished with 1,812 points, shot 54.1%, which is pretty crazy as well. And then Bill Chambers, who we've written an article about for his rebounding prowess, having set the all-time single-game NCAA rebounding record when he nagged 51 rebounds against UVA when William & Mary played in Blow Gymnasium, which is now Blow Hall, which they blew out and converted into an academic-type building. So he had less points than the rest. He played from 51 to 53. He had 1,456 points, but he did obviously so much more than just score the ball. He did everything and could rebound. Might be the best rebounder, one of the best rebounders in William & Mary history. 51 is, like, that's never going to be... Like, when is that going to be broken?
Never going to be broken.
Like, I don't think it's ever going to be broken. He said it was just a game. I was reading when I did a bunch of research on this, and we hyperlinked the article in our most recent post, if you want to read it, about Bill Chambers and that day and kind of how good he was. But it was just a different type of game back then where they just shot. They would just run down the court. They wouldn't really set an offense. They wouldn't really wait. They just go and shoot. And he said there were just so many times where he nagged, shot. And he also, it was a day where both teams weren't shooting that well. I mean, they couldn't have been shooting that well if he nagged 51 rebounds. And he wasn't apparently the tallest guy either. He just had a sixth sense for where the ball was going to be. And he was really good at that. And a lot of the people who talked about him and the way he played.
Sounds like Terry Tarpey.
Yeah, he was just one of those type of guys who would fill up the stat sheet. Yeah, like Terry Tarpey, not the biggest guy, but would get steals, turnovers, rebounds, blocks, do a little bit of everything. So those guys are all retired. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So Marcus would make himself the sixth player to have his number retired wearing the number 3. And so he finished with 2,178 points. So that's a little bit, that's like 120 more than Chet Giermack. Keep in mind, again, Chet played without a three-point line. Marcus played with a three-point line, but it's still impressive because Marcus still has to shoot those three-point shots, which are from farther away. So it's pretty cool to see this. And we were just wondering why Marcus's number is not retired. I mean, so where's he been? Think about, maybe Kyle, you think about this. Like, where, since Marcus has graduated, where has he played?
He's played in the U.S.
Got drafted, right?
Drafted by the Celtics, played in the U.S., yep. Played in the, was it the D-League when he was playing?
It was the D-League then.
Now it's the G-League. He's played in Europe.
No, then he went to Australia, right?
Australia, he's played in Europe. He's also played most recently, I think, in Asia.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, I think he did play in Asia. And now he's back to Europe again, right?
Back to Europe.
Signed in France.
Team. Yep.
Yep. So, like, all of those things mixed together has made it really hard for Marcus to come back to campus during the school year and during specifically the basketball season for a game. So we wrote this article on the blog kind of to push it forward a little bit more and kind of put maybe a little bit more of a sense of urgency in terms of, hey, like, it's time. We got to retire this guy's number. And communicated back and forth a little bit with the William & Mary Athletics Department and the Sports Information Department to kind of get a feel for where this was. And they did a really good job in clarifying with us what's happening right now and kind of where Marcus is in this process and also where they are with it. And they actually brought up some really good points and also some ones that we didn't necessarily know, because a lot of times around the internet, we would see folks either on the sports forums or commenting on social media, hey, his number's already retired. You know, this has been announced already, but it hasn't happened yet. But there's all kind of unconfirmed posts that people were writing in, and we really wanted to get it from more of an official source. So we were able to confirm a few different things with the Sports Information Department. So the first and probably most important thing is that no Tribe player will ever wear number 3 again. So it's, for all intents and purposes, it is retired. And Terry Driscoll, our former AD before Samantha Hughey, actually announced that number 3 was set to be retired. And that was long ago, more of a verbal thing, but essentially said no one would wear 3 again. And then Samantha Hughey, our current AD at the most recent town hall, reiterated the same thing. And really, it comes down to logistics now. The ceremony is going to take place, and this is what was confirmed through the athletics department, one day when Marcus's schedule allows. So he's been traveling the globe playing. Yeah, were you going to say something?
And when we have a home game.
Yeah, when we have a home game and when Marcus is able to come back. He actually recently posted a picture with, I think, a couple of our freshmen. It's one of Ben White and Ayesa, right? Right? It was those two guys.
Yeah,
so those two guys were working out with Marcus. Marcus still has a really good relationship with the school. Some of you might think, oh, like, Tony's gone, and Tony was big on Marcus, and Marcus big on Tony, et cetera. But no, Marcus still loves the school, comes back, trains sometimes, you know, on campus and things like that. So the relationship is definitely still warm, and essentially, it's going to come down to when is he going to be able to come back from France, if ever, and to put up his banner. You could make the argument, hey, why don't we just put up the banner and kind of call it a day? It's officially retired. But they really want to give him the ceremony that he deserves, being the all-time leading scorer at William & Mary. And in the interim, no one will wear number 3, which is pretty cool. And it'll be cool every time that we go back to campus to see number 3 hanging in the rafters and to be able to say that we were students during that time. Cause you, Kyle, you overlap with him for 2 years. Yep. So you're freshman and sophomore. Yeah. And I overlapped all 4 years. I can remember, I guess there's another thing we want to talk about, was like some memorable moments from Marcus's playing career. Do you want to, jump in and kind of talk about some of the most memorable moments that you have from Marcus, whether it be one or two or three different things?
Do you have more than one? We can do a little alternating.
I got a couple, yeah.
Okay. But first, I wanted to do a little plug. Thank you to, you know, Chris Sears for reaching out to us, confirming that his number will be retired, providing us that information. I mean, Chris has been great leading the sports information and does great work. And thank you for all your work with William & Mary Athletics and the athletic department.
So if you're listening, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. You do great work. But yeah, so breaking the all-time scoring record you talked about a little earlier, I mean, it was, to me, this was the coolest moment, because I mean, you and I were interns in the athletic department. We were on the court.
Yep.
Everyone was kind of expected, and I believe it was a snow day that day, so the place was packed. There were a ton of kids, students there to watch him break the all-time record. I think he did it at the free throw line.
Yep.
But I mean, it was a record, like you said, check here, Mac. It's 2,052 points. I mean, that record was untouched for 65 years, which at the time was the longest active record in all of Division I basketball up to that point. So, I mean, it was certainly historical, something I'll never forget. It was my sophomore year, your senior year. I mean, in that year, shortly after that, he broke the record. He was CAA Player of the Year, then got drafted by the Celtics. I mean, it was pretty good year for Marcus, but that was definitely one of my favorite moments, was just witnessing that history and that breaking a 65-year record. It's pretty memorable.
I remember that same one. This is So I have a couple that are different, but I'll just do one. But to build off the one you just talked about, remember I was trying to record it so we could put it on the blog, and he was going up for this nice drive down the lane to put up the shot, and then some guy hacked him, and we thought it would be so cool if he could have hit that shot to break the record on an and one or some sort of actual shot. And it was a little bit anticlimactic when it happened because it was at the free throw line, but it was still really cool, obviously, that it happened. And they being William Mary Athletics, had this cool graphic to put up on the screen when it happened. And it was an historic moment that was talked about and announced, I think, over the loudspeakers. So that was a pretty cool day. But one of the ones I remember, especially because I overlapped with him for 4 years, was from my freshman year before you even got to campus, which was Marcus's freshman year. So going into it, I think he was Maryland Gatorade State Player of the Year. So we knew he was good coming in. I still really had no idea how we got him. It was kind of in hindsight, all the stories that came out was that William & Mary was the first to offer him because he was kind of a late bloomer in high school from Bishop McNamara. And he really appreciated Tony Shaver and the rest of the coaching staff in offering him as early as we did before, you know, he became that player of the year in Maryland. But one of the big things that I remember from my freshman year was when VCU used to be in the CAA and Shaka Smart was the head coach of VCU. And this is, of course, you know, kind of at their heyday. I mean, they're still really good now, but they were really good then as well. And Shaka came in. This is when we played, you know, a home game and an away game every year, like we still do with CAA opponents. So VCU came to William & Mary, and the upper bowl on the away side, well, behind the benches at the top, was packed with black and gold. Pretty much the most I've ever seen in terms of an away team traveling. Obviously, it's not far, Richmond, you know, being what, 1 or 2 hours away, 1 hour away, I think. And they traveled down, and Marcus was still just a baby freshman at the time. And our team still wasn't that great around him yet, but he made some insane moves by himself as a true freshman, you know, dribbling to the lane, making layup shots. And I remember this one where Marcus made a cut to the basket, went through essentially the entire VCU team and got the bucket. And I looked over at Shaka because I wanted to see his response. He essentially looked up to the sky like, what are we doing? But also kind of knew, you could tell at the same time, that he knew that Marcus was the best player on the team, even though Marcus was just a freshman at the time. So it was cool to see, you know, Shaka Smart, VCU, one of the best, if not the best teams in the CAA that year, you know, show the signs of respect to Marcus, even as a freshman. And also it was just cool to have VCU in Kaplan Arena. I mean, that might have been the best team that we've hosted in the past 5 years, 10 years.
I'll do a 2-in-1 with them. Let's get them to Kaplan.
Okay.
That's a side story.
Wait, you're going to do your turn.
Oh, no, I was just saying, why don't we have VCU come to Kaplan anymore?
Oh, yeah. I wish.
I'll make it a 2-in-1. They can have two home games. We get one, man. This one.
What about Richmond?
Richmond. What? We used to have Richmond. We had Richmond when we were students. The Richmond was
that bad. Should be every year. Should be every year.
Well, same with VCU. Why should that not be every year? Won't they 10?
I mean, that'd probably have to be like a 3-in-1.
We finally have Mason now. Finally. We're getting Mason relatively regularly, which I like.
Yeah, because they've been more of a bottom feeder of the A-10, whereas VCU has been actually one of the better teams.
Yeah, for Richmond. I mean, Richmond. Yeah.
Richmond should be there, because Richmond's kind of a middle-of-the-road type A-10 team.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right, my second moment was my favorite Marcus performance. So, all-encompassing, culminated in the pass to Daniel Dixon for the shot in the CAA tournament against Hofstra. That game... I mean, the first thing we posted in our Green and Gold Club when we made our Facebook group was, you know, what is your favorite William & Mary moment, William & Mary sports moment? And that for me is my favorite William & Mary sports moment, was when Daniel Dixon hit that shot with less than a second left in double overtime of the semifinals of the CAA tournament. I mean, I jumped for joy. I was screaming, yelling. It was like the loudest I think I've ever been in a sporting event. It might have been not only the best moment for me in William & Mary sports history, but in my sports history in general, in any sport, in any, you know, professional, yep, college, anything. It was an amazing game. And it was Marcus's best performance in college. He broke the record for tournament points. He had 37. He set a new tournament scoring record with 37 points. He tied the game late with a couple of clutch free throws at 73, which forced the game 70-73, which brought it to overtime. He also hit a three-pointer in the first overtime to tie the game 83 and lead to the second overtime. And then obviously in the second overtime, with 8 seconds left, I actually went back and watched the ESPN thing that we posted, where they actually had like kind of the whole thing on ESPN. The Hofstra center, I forgot his name. It wasn't Goosey's, it was the other one. He missed one of the free throws. So we had 8 seconds. We were up, I think we were down two. And so we only had 8 seconds. Marcus runs all the way down the court, and three guys converge on him, one of which was Daniel Dixon's guy, who completely left Daniel Dixon alone in the corner, went over to Marcus. So three guys converge on him. He goes up as if he's about to shoot, and then passes it over to Daniel Dixon, and I mean, wide open. Three guys converge on Marcus. Daniel Dixon makes a shot, and it's just, I mean, obviously the place went bonkers. We won the game. It shows, I mean, he had 37 points, and in the biggest moment, in one of the biggest games of his career, he was unselfish enough to not take that shot, instead trust his freshman teammate at the time, which is Daniel Dixon, for the biggest shot of arguably his career as just a freshman, and it was only his second basket of the game. I mean, that to me was one of the coolest moments and Marcus's best game in a green and gold uniform.
That was going to be the exact one that I talked about, was not even that holistic game for him as having scored a ton of points, but that one play where he went up, drew two guys, Dixon sitting alone in the corner, he throws it to Dixon, who takes the shot. And yeah, to me, he finishes as the all-time leading scorer in William & Mary history, but to make that pass in that moment to a guy he knows can shoot the three, sees him shoot it every single day in practice. By the way, Dixon would essentially end up being one of the best three-point shooters in William & Mary history, if not the best. He and Birchfield were two of the best three-point shooters we've had. But for Marcus to know that and have the presence of mind while going up with less than a second left to throw it to Dixon in the corner and at Royal Farms Arena in front of his bench with Tony there, put it up, and for it to go through was insane in double overtime against Hofstra. And that was also an event where we had an insane amount of William & Mary alums there. If you remember, we pretty much blew every other team completely out of the water in attendance because it was at Royal Farms in Baltimore, which also makes me feel really good for the future now that the tournament is in Washington, D.C. over the next however or so many years, moving away from Charleston. So that'll be really cool. And that is 100% my number one basketball favorite game of all time. And as a side note, my other favorite William & Mary moment of all time was when you and I went to West Virginia when William & Mary went up 17-7 at the half. At that, if we could just stop the game at the half, that would have been good. But that halftime, though, that entire first half and then the halftime was one of the most insane experiences, being up at West Virginia in their home opener. West Virginia, the definition of football and football fanaticism, in a stadium which is bigger than most, if not just many, NFL stadiums, to have an atmosphere like that, a school that they probably have never even heard of and don't care about, comes in from the FCS and starts wiping up the floor 17-7. So that, but then of course we end up losing. I think it was like 21-17, right?
We didn't score.
It was like 21-17. I think we lost by four. And so depressing end, but the beginning of that, sitting with the Tribe fans in the corner with all the green and gold, was pretty cool. But by far, that Hofstra game, Daniel Dixon, three-point shot, double overtime, 0 seconds left to push us into the championship, was by far, for me, the best experience. And it's all because of Marcus that we were there, and then because of Marcus that he made the pass to the right guy at the right moment, who then made the shot, was pretty much the epitome of Marcus Thornton. And then, of course, he goes on to graduate as the leading scorer of all time. So we hope that he's able to get back to campus in the near future. Hopefully it's going to be this year. The sooner the better. We want to see at number three hanging in the rafters. So here's to hoping. We'll see what happens. But we wish Marcus the best of luck this coming year. And with that, we can probably wrap up this section and answer the Tribe trivia. Okay, so now it's time to answer the Tribe trivia question. As a reminder, the question was, when/what year did Jill Ellis and John Stewart graduate from William and Mary? So the hint was they did it within the same decade, and they graduated within 4 years of each other. And don't forget, they both played soccer at William and Mary. And so the answer is, John Stewart graduated in 1984, and Jill Ellis graduated in 1988. So they both graduated in the 80s, one in the early 80s, one in the late 80s. John's just 4 years older than Jill. So with that, I think this has been a really fun podcast to do with Jill Ellis having conquered the world for the second time here, and talking about Marcus Thornton and our favorite moments there. So we hope you enjoyed it. We kept this one a little bit shorter than our other ones, so hopefully you enjoy that as well. But with that, I think we can wrap up today's podcast, and we will see you all later. So roll Tribe.
Roll Tribe.
We will fight, fight, fight for the dance. It's time to victory.